My guests this week are Sarah and Tilly Lockie, a mother and daughter from County Durham who are testing the prosthetics of the future.
Just so proud, man. You couldn't be more proud of this girl.
Thanks, Mum.
Could ever be.
At 9, Tilly Lockie became the first child in the UK to be fitted with a hero arm, a bionic prosthesis with life-changing possibilities.
I can do a 2 hold like that, like a pinch.
Like a pinch like this, yeah.
Then if I press it again, I can do the even smaller, only one finger like that. And then also a point, like so.
Now at the age of 15, Tilly is busy supporting engineers to co-design the artificial limbs of the future for children and young people everywhere. But the seeds of Tilly's incredible journey were planted more than a decade ago when she fought off a deadly strain of meningitis. Tilly had been a healthy baby, but at 15 months, she was struck down suddenly by the virus. I'm Ian Wright, and from Something Else, this is Everyday People. To begin, Tilly's mum Sarah is going to tell me the details that Tilly is just too young to remember. A heads up that we start with a story that some listeners may find upsetting.
My mum shouted me into the kitchen and she went, Sarah, you've got to come see this. And I went in and she had like bruised, like awful bruised, like marks, like all over her nappy area. That was terrifying. Like I remember just pulling a tumbler off the draining board and pressing it against her skin and the mark didn't go away. And I was like, oh my God, I think it's meningitis. And I ran to the phone and I rang an ambulance. I grabbed a hold of her and I ran out the door and I thought, if I can meet the ambulance at the end of the street, it's like, it's a second quicker. Do you know what I mean? I just remember reading, like, meningitis, you need to, like, fight against time.
So now you're going to the ambulance. What was the ambulance journey like?
She was strapped up, like, to the monitors. Her stats were off the scale. And she was drifting in and out of consciousness. These marks were appearing before my eyes. Like, they were, like... Gosh. Raindrops hitting puddles, you know, like that. It's could see them just appearing, like on our neck, on our face, all over our body. And she was drifting in and out of consciousness and I felt useless, absolutely, utterly useless. And I was like, I'm a mom and I'm supposed to like protect her.
Oh my God. What did the doctor say, Sarah? What did the doctor say at this point?
When the ambulance door flung open, they were there. They grabbed a hold of Tilly and ran with her. And this woman came over to me and she went, I think you need to sit down. And then she goes, we think your daughter's going to die. And I was just like, what? I can just remember feeling like I'm in a dream, I'm in a nightmare, and this cannot be happening to Tilly.
So from the time you got there to the point when she says, you need to sit down, how long was that?
17 minutes.
Oh my God. So in 17 minutes, they already made the diagnosis that she's not going to make it.
Yeah. It wasn't confirmed at that point when she made that diagnosis that what it actually was. They believed that it was a form of meningitis, but they were taking blood samples out of her and testing them quickly in labs. When the consultant arrived, he confirmed that it was meningococcal septicemia strain B, which was a form of meningitis, which at that time there was no vaccination against, and kids die of this.
So they're saying that she might go. So then what happens? So
they said, right, what we're going to do is we need to close her body down and basically put her into an induced coma and just keep her alive by machines because we need her to be as rested as possible so that if she does show signs of fighting it, then she's got the strength to fight it. So they said, so come and see her before we close her body completely down. I think really they were telling us to say goodbyes because they did not think that she would open her eyes. But like, we were like, we're not saying goodbye to her. And I can just remember like saying into our ear, like, don't give up. Don't stop fighting. Just keep listening to our voices. We're with you every step of the way. Just keep fighting.
So from that time, when do you get to find out that actually she's going to be okay?
First sign she was okay was 4 days when she was in intensive care.
Oh my God, what did you do in those 4 days?
We lived at the hospital. We didn't leave our side. She was in intensive care 24 hours and we just prayed. I just lay by our bed, just like with my head on our bed praying. Like, to be honest, I've never prayed so much in my life. Every waking hour that I had, I did not stop saying a prayer.
Oh gosh.
I just felt like I just needed needed to feel like I was doing something.
So then when did you get the news that Tilly is kind of fighting through? When did you get the news?
The consultant that had spoken to us in Durham, he did his rounds every morning, and I used to shake every time I saw him. And on the fourth day, he came around and he looked at us. He smiled, he winked, and he just went, "I can't believe I'm saying this." He goes, she's doing it, she's fighting it. And I just, honestly, I've got goosebumps now just saying that to you. I just dropped to the floor, like in tears. Like, and the nurses even started crying that were looking after her on the one. They were like, "Oh my God, we're not allowed to do this." Do you know what I mean? And not allowed to get attached. But like everybody was just so like, how the hell this kid has come through this disease? Like they give her 0% chance of survival, but she did it.
Tilly's fighting spirit had amazed nurses and doctors. But although she'd beaten the odds, doctors warned that Tilly wasn't out of the woods yet.
At that point, he says, "But," and he pulled the blanket off her. He goes, "You can see that it's devastated her body. Already you could see that her hands were completely black and hard, and she had patches on her knees and her toes, really, really painfully sore for her. And that there will have to be amputations."
Amputations. Right then, in that moment, it became clear to Sarah that her daughter's life would never be the same again.
People have said to me, like, how did that feel?
Yeah.
Like, to be told that she could have amputations. And I was just like, at that point, all I wanted was my baby back.
Mm.
Like, I will cross any bridge. She could have been deaf, dumb, blind, like anything. I just needed to have my baby back. And I always said that I would just give her the best life I possibly could.
Doctors amputated Tilly's hands. In recovery, Sarah made her daughter a promise. One day, somehow, she'd give her back her hands. Back at home, there were months of healing and rehab ahead, and new challenges to adapt to. But mum and daughter were determined to face them together.
She was always so full of energy, even before she got ill. Obviously, when she first lost her hands, she had a few tantrums. She was like, "I can't do it."
I doubted myself a lot of what I could do.
How old was you then?
About
three, I would say. Three. But like, I speak of a time where like we were in a room and the door closed behind her, and I went to open it and I held myself back and I was like, actually, no, I know she can do this herself. She's going to have to learn. So she'd said, "Mummy, door, can you open it, please?" And I was just like, "No, Tilly, you can do that yourself." And she threw a tantrum. She's like, "I can't.
Mom, for goodness sake, open the door. I've got no hands."
Yeah, she was like, and it was upsetting. But I said, "No, Tilly, look, you can. You can. You try hard." And then
I'll try just to shut her up.
So she tried. And you know what? It didn't take her too long. She opened that door all by herself. And then I'll never forget the smile on her face when she turned and she looked at me and she realised she'd achieved it.
Mm.
And from that moment, she just had a complete different mindset.
I think that was definitely the turning point in my life when I decided, like, yeah, I can be dependent and rely on you and anybody else to do things for me.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can take charge and do things myself, even if some things I have to do a little bit differently.
And right. I think as well, just like we just surrounded her with so much love, like not just from us, but from the community. Like she's just had so much love in her life.
Sarah wanted to give Tilly every opportunity in life. So when Tilly turned two, they decided to explore prosthetics. But finding the perfect model wasn't easy. What kind of prosthetics did the NHS offer Tilly? What was it like at that stage?
They offered her, I've got it here. They offered her.
Oh, gosh. It's a hook. If you didn't get that already, they offer Tilly a hook.
So it's like two prongs that's tied together with an elastic band.
Let me see it, Tills. And so that's it.
So there's like a little hook on the side where a harness would attach, and then that would go around our shoulders
right.
And it would attach to the thumb. She was two.
Oh my gosh.
And like... to be honest, she was scared of it. I haven't got any photographs of her wearing it.
And it's scary. It's like, you know, makes you remind you of like Captain Hook or something.
That's exactly it.
Thing.
She would go around and she would be like chasing our sister around the room.
Did
with
not
it.
Use it as a hand whatsoever.
No. Didn't associate it with a hand. She would be like, I'm Captain Hook.
So Tilly, tell me about some of the early time with the hands. Like, we've seen that there. That looks like... So you were two then. When did you get to an age where you was using one that was half decent or something? Because that just looks so prehistoric.
Yeah, I mean, it totally does. I mean, it was given to us in a brown paper bag. So the whole experience was just a bit off, to be honest. God. And then as we went to leave, there was a woman who came running after us and she asked just what they'd given us, just out of curiosity. Mm. And we showed her and she just gasped and she went, you know what? That is what they gave me, the exact same thing. 25 whole years ago. Jesus. And it had not changed in the slightest, like the format, the functionality, nothing had changed whatsoever. So, I mean, this, as you can imagine, this was a bit of a nasty shock to us when we first got into it. And we just knew that, like, there had to be something better.
And was there? Was there anything better? Well, was that the only options?
All we were offered was a glove for the longest time, but I was never trying to hide the fact I had no hands. We never really understood why. Yeah. Like, why do I want a glove? I'm not trying to blend in. I just want something that's going to help me. You know what I mean?
Do you ever wonder how celebrities order food? Like, is Sarah Paulson a Diet Coke or a regular Coke girlie?
Some peasant Coke? No.
Or how does Sofia Vergara order a pizza?
No, nothing. No tomatoes. I cannot eat tomatoes.
Yes. Are you killed mushrooms?
Not really.
Okay. If these are the details you need, and I know you do, I have the podcast for you. I'm Jesse Tyler Ferguson, and on my podcast, Dinner's on Me, I take some notable friends of mine out to dinners in Los Angeles and New York City. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
That thing was delicious.
So they decided to go private and tried out a battery-powered electric hand. It was flesh-coloured and completely lifelike, but expensive and not very practical.
This is the private one that we got. As you can see, it's like pretty realistic. I would try it on, but it doesn't fit me anymore, unfortunately. This was based off of my older sister's hands. So it has all the wrinkles, all the freckles, fingernails that you could paint, the lot. It's got all.
Does it move at all?
It moves a little bit. Yeah, basically it's basically the thumb that moves like up and down. Yeah, and it didn't even open wide enough to hold like a cup or a fruit chute.
What were the kids like with you, with your hand?
Well, to be honest, if I was wearing them and I wasn't moving them, then it was like just a normal hand. People just thought it was a hand.
Yeah.
It was the fact that they looked so realistic but moved so robotically that kind of creeped a lot of people out because they didn't know whether they were real or whether they were fake. So I got an awful lot of stares. I remember that. Like, I couldn't walk across the street without everybody's eyes being on me. And I was asked about it a lot.
Yeah.
Usually the kids were fine after you explained the whole situation and moved on. But it was always like I would find myself wearing these hands. I felt like for the comfort of other people. And then I would take them off whenever I wanted to do something like practical, like even just opening a door, I couldn't do with these hands. So
was that it? Those are the options.
That was pretty much it. There really wasn't much else. And
I can remember being at an appointment and just saying like, what else is there? Is there anything else?
You know something, I can only look from my side and thinking, you know what I mean? That there's so many clever people around. Especially when you just said there, Tilly, I keep shortening people's names.
No,
I hate doing that.
So we're friends, Ian.
The thing is, Tilly, is that especially when the one what you showed me, you said a lady got the same one 25 years earlier. So now you've got to that stage. Are you disappointed?
I think my frustration was there was never anything available for kids. Mm. So there was more available for adults, but just nothing for children. Right. The answers that I would get was like, well, because of the cost of them, they cost a lot of money. So like having to upgrade them all the time would just be...
Because you're growing as a child, obviously.
It's extortionate for price. And then it's also the technology. They couldn't shrink it down small enough to fit into the size of a child's hand.
They'd gone through just about every model available on the market, but they still hoped for something different, something that was functional, but also unique.
When we were using the realistic ones, that was a point where we kind of realized, okay, there needs to be something better. But technology was not advancing. We were being told no. So we kind of were forced to take a break for a little bit.
And then 3D printers came on the scene.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's
when it got
changed.
Cool.
Right. In what way?
I'd started researching into prosthetics and like different prosthetic companies that maybe we could offer like Tilly to be a user and right. give feedback on technology. And then I'd heard about 3D printing. I just happened to put in prosthetic hand, 3D printing, and then up came Open Bionics and their appeal.
Open Bionics, a tech startup specializing in customizable prosthetics. They were looking for a young, below the elbow amputee to help test their designs.
And I was like, my God, it just seems like fate that I've stumbled across this.
We just really wanted to get involved. They were doing such amazing things. They collaborated with Disney and Marvel. Yeah. They were making Star Wars arms, Iron Man arms, Elsa from Frozen arms.
They wrote a letter about their journey and caught the attention of the company's bosses. Here's Sam.
Tilly's application was really heartfelt. She felt like she had a great need, like she really wanted to find prosthetics that were actually built for her. And she made a very good point that like she felt like all of the other prosthetics that are available in the world were not built for her. They were mass made, they weren't bespoke, they weren't unique, they didn't make her feel like these were her hands. And that spoke to the mission of Open Bionics. Like, we wanted to create bionic hands that championed people with disabilities. We wanted to champion their individualism and their uniqueness and celebrate what makes them different. And Tilly got that immediately. She was only 9.
At just 9 years old, Tilly was fitted with the Hero Arm, a bionic arm powered by intuitive, cutting-edge technology. Tilly's new arms opened up a world of possibilities. You became the first child to be fitted with the Hero.
In the UK, yes.
Mm. Yeah, first child in the UK that they were doing it with. So I got all my measurements with the orthopedic people and then they fit me up with it. We got straight into it. The first arm I got was actually based off of a video game called Deus Ex, and it was really, really cool. Instantly, I was going to all these tech events. I got to go to San Diego Comic-Con. I was there just strutting my stuff, honestly, like it was a catwalk, just running around with my bionic arms.
So Tilly first wore these really advanced multi-grip bionic hands when she was 9 years old. And as soon as she put the arms on, she was using it immediately. Her learning time was like 5 minutes. And she was just operating the hand. She was picking up, I think, a tennis ball that she threw at a window. It's really funny. And over the years, she has really adapted the devices to make the devices work for her.
Tilly, can you show me the arm? Can you show me it?
Sure. I'm more than happy to.
Look how cool it looks, man. Look. It's so cool. Tell me about it, Tills. It looks so cool. What was it like that first time, Tilly, that you put that arm on?
Oh my gosh. It was so much fun. Honestly, just instant power. Like, you put it on and you just instantly feel like a superhero. Because it's like what you see in like the Marvel films and everything. I love the fact that it was almost enhancing the difference rather than hiding it, which I'd done my whole life and I didn't want to do. But it was awesome. Like, I put it on, they gave me like a bunch of props. Mm. So I was having some fun with that, causing absolute chaos, to be honest. But yeah, it was so much fun.
Can you do some stuff with it? Because I love the way it sounds. You sound like something out of like Avengers Assemble.
Some bionic arm ASMR. So if I press the button, it kind of works like a menu system. There's a bunch of different things I can do. And if I press the button, I can do a two hold like that, like a pinch.
It's like a pinch like this, yeah.
Yeah, and then I can do, this is called the tripod. I like to use it as a peace sign more than anything else. Then if I press it again, I can do the even smaller, only one finger like that.
Wow.
And then also a point, like so.
Can you point any finger like that you want?
Yes, I can.
I think that is just absolutely awesome.
It brings me like so much confidence instantly. I'm a very confident person anyways, but I love putting my hands on and then like walking outside. Just if I'm going shopping, then I'll 100% manage to keep the arms with me. A lot of people think they're gloves a lot of the time, which I kind of think is a compliment to the company, really. Yeah, that means they move really, really fluently for people to mistake them as a glove.
You see, with your cool gear as well, you look like you know your stuff with the fashion side of things. Is that important to you with your arms as well and how you want your arms to be seen?
Definitely. I love matching it up to my outfit. I look at these more than just a medical device. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only the way I look at them, but the way everybody else has reacted to them and how excited people get by it. It's really exciting for me and it makes me want to experiment so much more. I always match them up to my outfits. Like, they're more of a medical device to me. I like to think of them as also a fashion accessory.
Yeah.
And I just think they look really cool.
Have you got something to do with how it looks and everything like that? Did you have some input?
There's a couple of features inside of the arm which I invented. My favourite being this freeze. So I'm going to have you pay attention to the button on the back.
Right.
Ta-da! Hear that beep, everyone on the podcast.
Yes.
So what does that do? That's me entering freeze mode. Now, no matter what I do with my muscles, because they're muscle operated, the hand will not open. And what's this really good for? Well, it's great for like just an extra bit of reliability, I think I was looking for. Mm-hmm. I was trying to interview my sister, believe it or not, with like a microphone. And I just kept holding the microphone and then tipping it over to her and like kind of dropping it. The hand mm-hmm. would open on its own. So I was speaking to them about that and they implemented the freeze button.
So, Tilly, tell me about some of the things you've been doing, like online and what you do.
Well, I'm all over social media, any platform you can find me. So I do a lot of modelling on Bionicoms. I also do a lot of motivational speaking.
Good.
So I talk about confidence and like my story, how I got to where I am today, that mindset that I possess and have done my whole life. I'm also always doing makeup tutorials. I do different fun videos like that, Q&As, answering anyone's questions and also giving information to other users of the Bionicom just to let them have someone to look at and like think how they can use it for themselves.
What about the cool media things you've been doing online?
Oh, the cool media things, where do I start? It's my favourite thing ever. I mean, I love social media with a passion. I just love doing it so much. I've gotten to do so many incredible things. With the motivational speaking, I was able to speak on a panel with the Dalai Lama. That was
I saw the picture and I think, oh my gosh, she's with the Dalai Lama. What was it like? What was he like?
It was crazy incredible. I mean, it was live streamed to like 70 plus countries, like a ridiculous amount of people saw that live stream. Everybody had their hands out to like, I don't know, give him a high five or something. Mm. So I joined in with my Bionicom, I held it out and he just, as soon as he got to me near the front, he like stopped, he took a step back, he just went, oh, and I was like, hi. And then he was like so excited by it. When he sat on the panel and then I went up to join him later on, he was like clapping. He was so excited. They was like, hey, that's the girl I met earlier. So it was really cool and incredible experience. Definitely like probably at the top of my list, I would say.
My gosh. It's really weird because I'd love to meet the Dalai Lama, but I don't know what I'd probably say. Honestly, it's amazing.
Like I was told from like 4 years old and given all these prosthetics like I needed to hide, but I knew in myself that I was never trying to hide and I was told that I never had to hide by the people I loved in my life. And I know so many people who are amputees, and I'm not just doing it for amputees and people with limb differences, just people who feel insecure in general, just to look any different. And like, I've been told, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. You can't do that. I was told I wouldn't walk. I was told I wouldn't live. I was told I wouldn't run. I was told I'd never play the piano. So I learned how to play the piano. Like just little things like that. I mean, it's not really little, isn't it? But people like tell you time and time again that you can't do something doesn't mean like that's factual. Like you can still do that. And to be honest, when people tell me I can't do something now, that encourages me to go out my way and just do it just to prove them wrong.
Tilly was building a huge following online. A platform caught the attention of teachers at Knotty Ash Primary School in Liverpool. Here's Chris.
So here at our school, we've got lots of children that have additional needs. What we wanted to help those children to be able to do, as well as all the children in the school, we wanted to allow them to celebrate the differences between each other and kind of not look at them as negatives. I don't even remember how we found her, but then when we started to look at Tilly's story, the children just couldn't take their eyes off what we were talking to them about. The more we got into it, the more questions came about, well, what is a hero arm or what is meningitis? So what started off as probably 3 lessons on Fact Files turned into probably 4 or 5 weeks of Tilly, basically. We wrote a biography on her. We wrote Fact Files on her. We did descriptions of her hero arms. And then we even went into kind of a whole design process where the children designed their own bionics. And all of that came from Tilly because she kind of shows off her bionics and her hero arms, and she made them cool to an extent where everybody in my class now wants one.
What's that like, Tills, to hear them say
so
stuff like...
So nice to hear. Honestly, it makes me actually want to cry because I've seen the little designs that they've done for their own bionic arms, should they ever need them, really, in the future. And honestly, it fills me with so much joy because that is exactly what I was like. Drawing, this is my dream bionic arm. I want a projector. I want lights in. And to see that all these kids are having so much fun designing their own bionic arms, like, it is something to be proud of and cool, because it is. And to think that I inspired that and that they were so interested, it's the cutest thing ever. I want to hug them all.
It's taken, like, the stigma away from, like, what a prosthetic was. Do you know what I mean? And making them not, like, so ugly and making them actually really cool and people want to wear them.
You know, I was going to say as well, Tilly, in respects of what options you'd probably like to see maybe 10 years from now, are you constantly thinking about upgrading it and what can be better and things like that? I was reading something about buttons, really small buttons, what I would probably take for granted.
Yeah.
Are those the kind of things you're thinking about, things that people can actually properly make sure they could do everyday things with these prosthetic arms and ear arms?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's three specific things that are very, very particular finger movements. Mm-hmm. And that is, like you said, doing like tiny, tinsy little buttons up. Mm. So it's doing fiddly little buttons like that. It's shoelaces, which is very annoying. And the last thing is like tying your hair up in a bubble. And three things that are really everyday things that cause the biggest inconvenience, I think, not only for me, but for like so many other people. Like those three things, I feel like if they could get them down in a prosthetic, I would be overjoyed. Like I would actually be overjoyed.
So Tilly, being an influencer and doing a lot of stuff online, like you mentioned, what's your mission now? You're just going to continue doing great stuff like you're doing?
Well, my mission is I want to continue doing what I'm doing, continue with the motivational speaking, continue working with Open Bionics. I've got so many big ideas and I can't wait to actually get there and get them available, not only for me, but for all the other kids who are going to benefit from that. I feel like future and fashion and technology are going to come together so much in the next couple of years. And I can't wait to see that and just show everyone how cool they really can be.
And can I just say my challenge really is like, I just think these arms are like so incredible and so much more useful than what the NHS already offer.
Yes.
So like, I just think having a choice of what limb that you wear is a complete and utter human right.
Yes.
And that they should be available in the NHS. So that's like my...
100%.
Like that's what I want to be able to do, is like just to try and get further with that and
give everyone access to
it. Everyone needs access to these arms.
One of the visuals that I can't get out of my head at the moment is the first time you got the bionic arm. I'd love to have seen that, because you can imagine what it's like for children with prosthetic arms and how much they would probably want that to happen. So you'd have to feel that. What more do you need to do for them to understand that it's needed? And not only just for the fact that it's going to be more functional, and we've heard about all the unbelievable ways that Tilly uses it, but the fact is that it makes you feel good.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what I've always said. Like, it's got, as well as having such a huge physical, like, effect, it's such a great medical device physically, like, it helps so much. It also helps so much mentally as well. And I know for me personally, and so many other users so far, like, mental health has absolutely skyrocketed because of us being told that we had to hide, to now people being excited and wanting to shake your hand. It's such a great like transformation, and I think everybody deserves to feel like that.
What you must like most about having a platform in respects of being able to get your voice heard and talk about prosthetics and everything, but what's it like when people come to you and say thank you for being so cool, and you know what I mean, you are so cool? What's that like, that
honestly
feeling?
It's so amazing. It's like, it's definitely got to be the best part to it. Like, it just completely makes your day. I can't even put it into words. Like, seeing a message to me saying thank you so much, Tilly, you've given me so much confidence. I have to take a screenshot every time I see it, and I've got like a collection, and it honestly makes me so happy, because that's why I'm doing it. I just try to be what I would have wanted to see when I was younger. Like, it's nice to see that your difference as well could be so widely accepted and appreciated by such a big following, you know? Mm. So it's honestly incredible. Like, nothing like it.
Sarah, I can't understand. I'm listening to Tilly and seeing how effervescent she is, how brave she is, how brilliant she is, beautiful she is. Where does she get that unbelievable drive and personality and strength?
From me, obviously.
It's so inspiring, Tills. It's so inspiring. Just sitting here listening to you.
Thank you so much.
Sarah, listening to everything what's happened now and, you know, how far Tilly's come, what's it like when you look back on everything what's happened?
Wow. I can remember, like, a nurse coming into the room when she survived, and she just went, you know what, you've got one special little girl and she survived for a reason.
How come they knew, Sarah? They knew she's got a special purpose.
She's definitely got a special purpose. And you just, I'm just so proud, man. You couldn't be more proud of this girl. She's just like overcome her own barriers and just trying to help other people overcome theirs. And it's like, she's just got such a caring, sunny nature about her. And she just wants all the best for everybody. So, like, I'm just the proudest parent.
No, thanks, Mom.
I'm going to be there, Tills, right behind you now for life. So inspiring, honestly.
Thank you so much. It's definitely been a journey. It's definitely had, like, its highs and lows, to say the least. But, like, tell me, like, 2 years ago that I would have done everything that I've done now. Even speaking to Ian Wright, like, wow.
It's not that big a deal, Tills. It's more a bigger deal when people hear this, that I'm speaking to you. The more of these I do, it makes me feel even more just privileged to be able to sit down and listen to your stories, because you are proper heroes. What you do. Thank you. Listen to that school. Listen to what they're saying at that school. They've done a curriculum on you, Tilly. I've never had a curriculum. I don't deserve to be called a hero. I'll be following you. Make sure you follow me as well, Tills.
I will. Don't worry about it. I definitely will.
What can I say, ladies? But thank you so much. Thanks very much, Sarah, for sharing the story. Thank you so much, Tilly, for your wonderful, inspirational story. You are truly an everyday people hero.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ian.
Speak to you again. Next time on Everyday People, breaking new ground with Ref JJ. Do you call people over?
All the time.
What kind of things do you say?
So, I
and you're so small, you're looking up to...
I'm so small. Do you know how long it takes them to come to me? I'm like, excuse me, number 9, can you come here, please? And they look around. I'm like, yeah, the short lady just called you. You better
come. Did you say that?
No, I'm saying that in my head. I'm like, you better come.
If you like what you've heard so far and think you've got an amazing story to tell, I'd love to hear from you. Get in touch at everydaypeople@somethingelse.com. That's everydaypeople@somethingelse.com, without the G. Everyday People is a Something Else production, hosted by me, Ian Wright, produced by Jade Scott. Our assistant producer is Grace Laker. Our executive producer is Ollie Wilson. Sound and mix engineer is Josh Gibbs, with thanks to Chris Skinner and Steve Ackerman.